Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 315, recorded December 12th, 2016.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hi, guys.
Well, it's episode 315, and we've got four contributors.
Yes, indeed.
As well as a couple of things of our own.
We have Matt in Perth, Western Australia, Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Joe in Hudsonville, Michigan, Mick in Carnforth, UK, and yes, your updates.
So okay.
Do you want to go first?
Sure. Well, the Julitochromas seem to be doing well. They seem to have maintained their pair bond. Of course, they're in a temporary tank right now, so that's something I'm going to have to deal with when I move them. But so far, they're
just,
maintaining their pair
set
bond.
Them up a little Campbell Lake dinner in the new tank.
Oh, okay. We'll try that. See how it goes.
Oh, yeah.
Get some underwater candles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good idea.
And then the multis are also doing well. I've been trying to keep tabs on the babies in the new tank with the newer group of multis. And I can tell that they're frying there still. They're still at the age. This is something I've noticed. They seem not to swim up into the water column very much at all for a couple of weeks. Just, I don't know if it's because their swim bladders aren't fully developed or because they're afraid or both or whatever. But they do appear down at the base of the shells and so on. But then after a while, they get to the point where they are, you know, out and about unless they get spooked. So the,
and then they dive back in.
Yeah, so the multis in the other tank that are the progeny of that dwarf multi are doing, you know, they're getting quite a bit bigger and they're almost always out unless they get scared, but these others haven't done that yet. But anyway, they're all doing well. The hornwort that I mentioned last week is indeed continuing to grow. It's still quite small. There are just a couple little sprigs of it, but I am optimistic that if it's gotten this far, it will continue to
do well.
And I've increased the photo period in that tank now with a siesta period, but no sign of the cyanobacteria coming back. Everything seems fine.
That's good.
So I'm excited about that, too.
Hooray!
And I ordered a couple new supplies for the tank, with including a Biowell 350 and a new heater. And then I was having some problems with a Python connection and realized I had a part in the garage I had ordered last time from Amazon just for a few bucks.
Yeah, that was a happy discovery.
Yeah, a new Python pump and the connector assembly. So found it in there, put it in, got everything working again. It took a while because I had to adjust the tightness on the valve that you switch between drain and fill, and so it wasn't draining or filling very quickly. And you know, there's a kid downstairs operating that part while I'm upstairs, and we're back and forth, stand by, you know, all that stuff. And so it took us a while to figure out what's going on, but eventually got that fixed, and now it's fixed, so good to go for a while until another part of the Python needs to be replaced. But I was talking about that with the kids the other day. Had that thing for about 15 or 16 years. So the fact that I've had to replace several bits of it,
it's not so bad.
It's not so bad. And it, you know, it just keeps going because I replace things. It works. Kind of nice. Anyway, let's go on to our contributors.
Okay. Oh, and my screen just died.
Mm-mm. It happens.
That was timing. Okay. Oh, hang on. Sorry, guys.
It's
open
okay.
It back up. It's having some
we're back in.
Technical issues today. Okay, let's go to Matt in Perth today first.
Yeah.
And he says, good day, Sir Russell and Lady Kelly.
Oh, I like that.
Good day, Sir Matt.
Calling us that.
And he says, in the news over in Australia, all the experts are saying that the Great Barrier Reef has had the largest coral bleaching event on record.
Ooh.
Which is kind of scary. Some of these corals are hundreds of years old, and it will take longer than I am alive for the reef to fully recover from this damage. In previously pristine parts of the reef, around 67% of the coral died due to global warming-induced warmer waters.
Yeah, that is terrible.
That's like two-thirds.
Mm-hmm.
That leaves hardly anything statistically.
Yeah,
if you had a 67% chance of getting struck by lightning if you walked out of your house today, you probably wouldn't walk out of your house.
Right.
Our politicians, however, do not care about that. All the politicians here care about is money and jobs. We are regularly hearing about new coal mines being approved in Queensland. These mines need to destroy local reefs to allow the ships in to pick up the coal. There's no reason at all to continue to mine coal. Australia could be running on concentrated solar power. Concentrated solar power works by using hundreds of mirrors in a field that shine the light of the sun onto the top of a tower. The mirrors move to counter the movement of the sun during the day, keeping the light constant at the tower top. The temperature, which reaches 1,000 degrees Celsius, or 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit, that's really hot.
Yeah.
And molten salt is pumped up the tower, heated, then pumped into insulated storage containers. Then the 1,000 degrees salt is pumped as needed underneath water baths that turn into steam, and that steam powers traditional generators to create electricity. I think that's really cool.
I love that.
I don't know a lot about various methods, but it sounds really neat.
Mm-hmm.
The advantage of this is the salt stays warm at night and therefore can create 24 hours of clean energy.
That is a really cool idea. Mm-hmm.
And see, people who used to work in coal mines, they get first, how about this? This is my idea. This is not an email, but they get first dibs on being trained in how to work in the solar plant or whatever jobs need to get filled there. Yeah, and then they still have a job. Everybody's happy.
Yeah.
He keeps going, we could use these to power the entire of Australia cleanly. This would do our part to stop poor Nemo and Dory from having their homes destroyed by global warming-induced coral bleaching. I know electricity generation is not strictly about aquariums, but I feel justified in including it as global warming threatens our fishy friends, and that is about aquariums. I would agree with that. I think most people who are interested in the creatures of the world are also interested in ways to keep those creatures alive and kill everything off.
That makes a lot of sense. And I also think that even people who are dubious about the effect that humans can have on global warming it seems that you can see that there's a connection between the coal mines and how the concentrated solar power would still be preventing the coal mines from having an impact on the coral reef. So
right.
Either way.
They wouldn't have to do the thing with the ships.
Yeah.
Well, and I kind of feel like whether or not people think global warming is human-induced, it just makes sense to take care of your home. You know, it makes sense to do things that are more sustainable. It makes sense to do things that keep the earth cleaner and functioning. There's no reason to not do those things.
Right, and there's, you know, if you can find a way to keep something sustainable and not have to use fossil fuels, then it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. So I hope they do eventually, as soon as possible, that they implement that in Australia, as well as other places where it would work.
That sounds like a great idea. Okay, Matt goes on now. I will talk about actual aquariums. My reef tank is going strong. It has just 3 fish in it right now, but still a mountain of corals. I have a pair of clownfish and a dartfish. I have to admit that out of my 3 tanks, I like the biggest most, as there are no plants or corals that need consistent care. I've gone quite mad with my 6-foot. You see, I said in previous emails that I was only going to get sensible, easygoing fish. Well, I have now bought another 9 discus. I know, I am not learning from my previous experiences, but they are just so pretty! And then he types in gleeful smile. They're all eating well and seem to love being in a big tank in a big school. I have attached 2 photos of the discus. I added a stunning blue discus after these photos, but you can still see the first 8 of them. They come up to me when I pass the aquarium and are not at all timid. This is unusual for discus, as they're usually timid fish that require dither fish, but not my new babies.
No, that's cool. I wonder what makes the difference. Yeah, and they're pretty, looks like they're pretty small still, but they're beautiful fish. They're
pretty spiffy looking.
Got all different colors, too. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see patterns the blue one eventually as well that he was talking about.
Those 2 are blue. It must be a different blue one.
Yeah.
We'll put the picture up, of course.
Yeah.
Then he says, the planted aquarium is being invaded by hair algae, which is so annoying to get rid of. I'm thinking about just getting rid of all the plants and gravel and starting again. I do not think it will need cycling, as my filter's already cycled and it should send up lovely bacteria to repopulate the soil. What do you think the best way to get rid of hair algae is? It really is everywhere, so there isn't going to be a conservative treatment option. My fish shop suggested turning off the light for 3 days, as that should kill off the super fast growing algae, but not the plants. That is all for now. Matt from Perth, Western Australia.
That is a bit of a tricky problem. One thing, the blackout periods can be helpful. I mean, I used a blackout period to help me get rid of the cyanobacteria. Can be helpful against algae because they do, like it says here, it's harder on the algae than it is on the plants. Doesn't mean necessarily it'll kill it all, but it could help. And I've had good results with Sea Chem Flourish Excel. You can also
get... What does the Excel do?
It, for whatever reason, it seems to discourage algae.
Not only does it help little plants, but... The fertilizer for the plants?
It's a carbon source.
Okay.
So it's not fertilizer in the sense of, you know, it's not have nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, or iron or things like that in it, but it does provide a carbon source. Basically, plants, you know, usually get atmospheric CO2 or the CO2 dissolved in the water, which is replenished through atmospheric CO2. But if you put in that carbon source, the plants can use it as if, you know, as to augment whatever atmospheric CO2 they're getting. So it boosts the amount of carbon, which is a limiting factor.
So does it just kind of help the other plants outcompete the algae, or does it actually directly harm algae as well?
And with that big of a tank, I wouldn't recommend starting with a small bottle, because even though you can, it doesn't take a lot to dose the tank. In a 6-foot, you know, aquarium, you would go through it pretty fast. A couple of options: you could get the bulk bottles, which are cheaper if you get it in a larger bottle.
Cheaper per ounce?
Cheaper per ounce. Or there are some generic alternatives, or I shouldn't say generic. There are some, because the substance used, the active ingredient in Flourish Excel, is also a disinfectant. It can be used as a disinfectant. I would look into using, and you have to be careful which type you get, but there are types that aquarists have used and purchased. It's much cheaper to buy it as a disinfectant. And if you use it in the right concentration to make sure it's the one that's safe for aquariums, you can use that instead. And so it costs you much less to use, but you're still getting the
same
thing.
Just take some research.
Yeah, so it takes some research into it. I haven't used any of the other brands. I've only used Sea Chem Flourish Excel because I'm generally dealing with fairly small tanks. But that would be worth a look into, because it does, a lot of people report success with it, with algae. I've had success with it, you know, fighting algae. So I would recommend looking into it at least.
Okay, well, hopefully that will be helpful.
Yeah, let us know how it goes.
And thank you, Matt, for teaching us about solar. That was cool.
Yeah, and check out his pictures of his lovely discus on the page.
Okay, should we go to Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan? Okay.
Let's do it.
He says, "Hello, I took a video as promised. I am feeling better, but I am still a little sniffly in the video and also a bit rambly. The first video is my fish, the second is the horned frog setup, and the last is a video of my cat, because he was being very cute. That's okay, our cat likes to get into the aquarium, so that's kind of related."
Get into the aquarium?
Well, yeah, like get into, like he tries to drink out of him and...
Oh, yeah. Well, but we have them all covered except for the Daphnia.
Yeah, I know, he likes to drink out of the Daphnia. It's a tank. They're in an aquarium.
That's true.
It's cats. Cats in aquariums... They both have A's in them.
That's true. I was just thinking...
You know, cats are just cute anyway, so...
Yes. But I was trying to think, has he ever gotten into any of the fish aquariums? I can't recall that he ever had.
I don't think he's actually jumped. I just meant get into, like, you get into stuff, you know, like...
Oh, okay. Yeah. But he definitely does drink out of the Daphnia water.
He does. Even though it's his actual water dish...
It's like 2 feet away.
Right. No, not even. It's like 6 inches.
Is it?
It's right next to that shelf.
It's very close to it.
I think the Daphnia is more seasoned. It has a better flavor. Okay. So we'll put those links up, of course.
Yes. And I would like to mention that you got to check out the way he's arranged his aquascape to be modular and removable, which is very cool in the fish video. In the frog video, this is a really cool idea. He has it set up so that he's basically set up a sump to his horned frog tank. And horned frogs are not strictly aquatic. They're, you know, they like moist areas.
He has two different parts of the tank.
They're like Rubbermaid style tubs. I don't know what brand they are, but they're plastic tubs. And he's got the enclosure for the horned frog on the top layer. And then in the bottom shelf, he's got a sump, essentially. And he's got like a drip system set up so that water drips from the sump into the water dish. So it's constantly being renewed. and then drips out of the water dish and through the substrate and then out of that tank. There are a couple of different layers in the substrate, out of that tank back into the sump through a mountain filter. Mm-hmm. And so it keeps the cycle going. I think it's a really cool idea.
Neat.
And it made me think of a lot of other things that you could do with that. Like, instead of using cocoa fiber as the main substrate, if you were to use, say, ABG mix, which is, you know, a lot mm-hmm. more permeable.
You could grow plants in it.
There would be interesting things you could do, including growing mm-hmm. plants in it. Or if you were to use a substrate of something like Featherlite or Hydroballs, or, you know, something like that, and then a soil separator, and then a thinner layer of cocoa fiber, you know, what could that do to maintain the aerobic nature of the top layer? Lots of cool stuff. But at any rate, the setup as it stands is really cool, but it also stimulated some ideas in my mind of what to do with that, because I had thought about how the trick with frogs like that is that they produce a lot of waste, and the main drawback of having one is that you have to do frequent cleaning. But Jeremiah has at least partially solved the problem here. He's definitely reduced the maintenance, which I think is really cool. Mm-hmm. And it might lead to other possibilities.
Cool.
It's cool.
Okay.
And he does have a really cute cat, so check that out, too.
I haven't seen him yet. I'll have to go.
He reminds me of Cosmo because he gets you to pet him, and then he kind of wants to bite.
And then he
wants
to eat your liver.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's our cat.
Not quite as violent as our cat, but anyway.
Our cat, I think, is, I don't know, he's a little deranged. Okay, so Jeremiah goes on. As far as the axolotl tank, it did not come with a stand or lighting, and the canister filter is full of hard water calcification and seems to leak. I'm not sure if I will be using it or not. However, the tank is a 40-gallon. The canister is only rated for 30, and I know most aquarists have the rated number, so it's really for 15 gallons. I think I know why the previous owners had issues. I was a bit suspicious of a new food causing a die-off, but some foods can cause water issues, so I think that is the likely culprit. I'm going to be rinsing it with a vinegar solution. Anyway, I hope you and everyone in the Aquarimax community has a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. Wow. Happy Holidays.
Sorry, thank you, Jeremiah, and the same to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is this Joe next?
We got Joe next. Oh, I forgot to label that one, sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. Okay. It says, hello, Resin Kit. I should have known from that. Right? Yes. Says, first things first, my wife's 5-gallon office tank is doing much better after some manual algae removal and a water change. To be kept up on more regularly, I promise. I also have her dosing the tank with Excel on a daily or every other day, squirting the nasty patches as needed.
Good to hear things working.
Second, my 55-gallon tank is becoming more and more planted. I'm trying to only use plants from my quote-unquote daughter's 15-gallon tank wherever possible. The only plants that I have bought are the ones along the back that are on the left and middle. Sorry again for not knowing my plants' names. It is a brain block I seem to have, and he's got them in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
There.
Oh, this picture got messed up in the...
And of course, again, all the PDF, of these pictures will be...
I've seen the original picture, but it got kind of sliced in half when we had to convert it to PDF to get it to transfer to the other computer. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, yes. Okay. On that note, can you tell me what the plant on the right piece of driftwood is? The plant on the top.
And I believe this is the one he's talking about. Yeah. I think if you're talking about the one on the driftwood, I'm looking
at... It's kind of like in a little crook on the
driftwood. Yeah, a little crook on the driftwood about mm-hmm. halfway up. That is liverwort, Pellea, also known as Monosonium tenarum.
Oh, okay.
If it's not that particular species, it is a related species. It's definitely a liverwort. Another common liverwort that a lot of people would be familiar with. I mean, Monosonium tenarum is a common one. Another one would be something that's called Rickia or Richia, depending on how you pronounce it. That's one too, but it has much finer thalli, which are like the plant structures. It doesn't really have leaves or true roots or anything. It's a kind of a primitive plant, but they're called thalli. And anyway, they're very fine, and that plant tends to float. This one, but can be used to make a lawn or a carpet effect. This one has much wider thalli, and so they look more like leaves. But they're fun plants, and that's what it is. It's one of those liverworts.
Cool. Okay. He says, that came on some driftwood, so I repositioned it, and it seems to be growing. I just have even less idea what it is because I didn't buy it on purpose. That's okay. Now you know. Next question. Every once in a while, I get live ram's horn snails floating on the surface. Is this a normal thing? Lastly.
Yes, it is.
Oh, sorry. He's got another question. Yep. You go first.
Snails, ram's horn snails and others will often float on the surface and kind of cling to the surface film and they'll nibble on whatever they, you know, is there. They're often...
They're floating. They're in a happy floaty place on an adventure.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's so pretty normal. Okay. Mm-hmm. As long as they're, like, climbing or trying to, you know, connect like that. If they're just floating there and their body is hanging out of their shell and they're not really moving around, that's a problem. But as long as they're, like, attached to the surface film and, you know, moving around most of the time, then they're fine.
Okay. Says, Leslie, I lost a panda coricat this morning. All the water parameters are where they need to be, i.e. ammonia 0, nitrite 0, nitrate around 5 parts per million. The red cherry shrimp are breeding and the cardinal tetras are fine. I didn't notice any changes in the deceased, just a dead fish this morning when I got up. The rest of the cori school seems fine. I'm down to 6 now. Any ideas?
Yeah, I was kind of puzzled by that because the water parameters sound good and everything else seems good. Mm-hmm. I asked him if there had been environmental changes in the room and he said yes.
Oh, yeah, he says, in fact, there has been environment change in the room. That room is the chilly room in the house. We just got our first dose of Michigan winter with temperatures in the low 20s and 13 or more inches of snow. The room has been cooler, to say the least.
And
would that do anything?
Well, I'm wondering about that because the cardinals, they're kind of cold sensitive, and they seem to be fine, so mm-hmm. I'm not sure what's
Might
going
be
on,
something
honestly.
Else.
Hmm.
Maybe he swallowed a piece
and
of gravel.
The heater and the lid should keep the fish from, you know,
mm-hmm.
having too many troubles with that unless it really got really cold. But it sounds like everybody else is fine. Cherry shrimp can stand pretty cool temperatures. Panda corys, not as much as cherry shrimp probably, but probably a little more than the cardinals, I'm thinking.
You think it just could have been some random thing with just that fish?
Could have been, because otherwise you'd imagine that the corys,
the
other corys would suffer or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I imagine the temperatures in the tank are fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
Okay, well, sorry about that, Joe.
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't continue.
But keep us posted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, should we go to Mick?
Yes.
Okay, he says, hi guys, firstly, a happy Christmas and best wishes for a particularly piscine 2017 to Aquamaxers everywhere.
Same to you.
Hope you've had a good break from the podcast for a few weeks. It's coming up, but I'm sure there will be a cavalcade of new contributions for the show in the new year.
I hope so. And we're excited for the interviews. We'll talk more about that in a minute.
Thought I would send you a slightly shaky video of the new dwarf galaxy guppies. I got a group for the shop, but it is strange how many of the females suddenly turned up in a tank at home. Ha 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 ha. I buy and fish from a number of suppliers here in the UK, but Runemans in Holland have had these a few times before, and I missed out on them. So I struck lucky this time getting them sent over. And he sent us a video of them, so we'll put that up.
They're cool guppies. Mm-hmm. One thing I like about them, at least the ones that he has in this picture, they have the kind of snakeskin sort of pattern that I remember was very popular. I used to have some snakeskin guppies. They don't have really big fins, and I don't know if that's because they're young or what. I'm not really familiar with this particular strain of guppies, but there's kind of the nostalgia of those patterns, but they're quite intense patterns, intense coloration, so they're cool fish.
He says, I have also been trying out springtails as feeder insects for my silver halfbeaks. They were struggling with the Drosophila flies, but lapped up the smaller springtails. I was wondering if Russ, as the much-celebrated and well-published King of Aquatic Live Foods, has any tips on harvesting them. I'm doing okay getting them onto the water surface, but they are by very nature springy and seem to have no sense of direction.
Well,
that's true enough.
Yeah. I don't know if I can call myself King of Aquatic Live Foods, but I don't
mind
if
you
do.
That's okay. Mick already called you that.
Yeah, I kind of like that. Okay, well... first of all, the Drosophila flies, are they melanogaster, Apteris melanogaster, the wingless ones? Or are they larger Hydei, or are they a winged version? Because that could make a difference. So just wondering which particular strain you're working with the melanogaster, or with the Drosophila fruit flies. But onto the springtails, harvesting them, my favorite way of doing it is taking a container, just a plastic container that's fairly deep and fairly wide-mouthed, and putting it next to the springtail container, and then just picking up bits of charcoal, if that's the kind of culture you're using, and tapping them together right over this second container, and they just fall into the bottom. And then I have a ton of them in there pretty soon after tapping the piece of charcoal together over it, put the charcoal back in, and then I have, you know, however many springtails I need in there. But I'm not quite sure I understand exactly the part that's giving you trouble, because it sounds like if you're getting them onto the water surface in the tank...
Are they jumping off the water surface
out of the tank? Is that the issue? Because then the only thing I could suggest would be lowering the water level temporarily.
What happens if you kind of splash them under the water? Are they less appealing?
No, they can't. They're pretty much...
They're just too teeny and...
They stay on the surface.
Water resistant.
Until the fish yank them down and eat them, pretty much, unfortunately. Well, I don't know if it's fortunate or unfortunate, but that's what it happens. If it is that, you know, that's what I would probably do, is just keep them in a tank with a lower water level until they get a little bigger, so that the springtails aren't hopping out, if that is indeed what's going on. If it's just when you're getting them on the water surface in the culture container and then trying to get them out, that's another thing. I mean, what I usually do, if you're having problems getting them out of the container, they're all on the water surface in the container, the culture container, you want to get them out. Most cultures usually do this. They pour some water into the container until it kind of floods the container mostly, and there are a whole bunch of them on top of it, and you just pour out a quantity of that water into another container, and then a lot of springtails go with it, and they'll be on the surface of that water. And then you can use that to put in your tank. So, whichever problem you're having, if it's with the culture container and where the springtails are with that, that's how you deal with it. And if it's in the actual tank, then we could just lower the water level in the tank if the filter you have in there allows you to do so.
Okay.
Hopefully that's helping. I'm not entirely sure I've got the issue you're asking about. So if I'm wrong, please let me know, and I will attempt to correct accordingly.
Respond differently.
Yeah.
Okay, but I think that's everybody.
That's about everybody. So
next week, the interviews start.
The next week, yeah. Interviews start next week. There will be 3 interviews. One of them is 2 parts, because I had to separate it, which is great, because then you get 4 weeks of interviews, which is awesome. All of the interviews were really fun to do. They should be really interesting. They're all on different topics, and it's really fun. So we're excited. Please let us know what you think. You know, you can like them on Facebook, or you can... you know, share them, whatever you want to do. That'd be really fun. And let's see. Yeah, that's about it. So we'll be back with the both of us on the podcast again in mid-January. But we are going to try to do more interviews. I really would like to try to get 1 a month. So I'm going to try to be contacting people for that. And if you're interested, you have a species of fish or whatever, concept, anything that's aquarium related that you'd like to talk about, let me know, because I'd be interested in having you on the podcast in that respect. So we'd like to wish all of you, those of you who celebrate Christmas, a very Merry Christmas. Those of you who celebrate Hanukkah, very happy Hanukkah. Those of you
who
celebrate
Yule.
Something else, yeah, whatever you celebrate.
What else? I don't know what the greeting is for Kwanzaa. Is it just happy?
I think
it's
happy Kwanzaa. Yeah.
Okay.
And
in any case, a lovely, fabulous, wonderful set of holidays for you all.
And I know there are some of you who are in countries where there aren't any particular holidays in this time of year, but just have a happy time then.
Just have a happy few weeks and enjoy the interviews.
and best fishes.
You can make some yummy food and eat it on a holiday just for fun.
There you go. But everybody enjoy your aquariums, and we will talk to you soon. May the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.